Stock indices are falling again today. I'm David Brancaccio in New York. After the Dow tumbled 4.4% yesterday, 1,100 points, the Dow on this day after is now down another 720 points, 2.8%. The S&P 500 is down 2.7%, the NASDAQ down 2.4% now. Given the uncertainties of the coronavirus and its effects on humans and commerce, we're on track for a week with the biggest stock losses since the 2008 financial crisis, and it is a correction, down more than 10% from a high. Marketplace's Sabri Benishor has more on this letter C.
Corrections are not uncommon. There have been three since 2015, 26 since World War II, not counting this one. John Bollinger is president of Bollinger Capital Management.
Typically what happens in a correction is that a market has come a little too far, a little too fast. And we call them a correction because it corrects the excesses that have been built up in the market.
The current correction for the S&P 500 was the fastest in history, according to Deutsche Bank. Corrections don't typically last all that long. Andrew Caroli is professor of finance at Cornell.
Sometimes it can be very, very rapid. Those are the whipsaw type of events where there's a large negative drop in the markets that are corrected almost immediately. But sometimes the recoveries can be very, very slow.
A correction can set the stage for continued growth because it clears out unrealistic bets. On the other hand, there are some corrections that keep falling, and if they fall enough, 20% off of highs, that's called a bear market and often accompanies recession. In New York, I'm Sabri Benishor for Marketplace.
The broader S&P 500 is now down 13% this week so far. Out of stocks into bonds, where fervent demand allows yields to fall, and fall they did. The benchmark interest rate, the yield on the government's 10-year note, has fallen to its lowest ever. Christopher Lowe is the chief economist at FTN Financial in New York, with an office just off of FTN's bond trading floor. Busy, are we over there, Mr. Lowe?
You could say that, yes. Huge movement, obviously, in all financial markets. And what people want to know from us in economics is what is exactly going on in the economy. And unfortunately, you know, we just don't have very much data yet.
Did you think you'd live to see the day when the benchmark yield was down to 1.19% this morning? I mean, this is really a readout on how hard it is to parse the effects of this virus.
Yeah, it really is. Look, thankfully, my boss did give me permission to put a note out on Tuesday warning people the yield was probably going to go below 1% before this thing is contained. But what we were looking at when we made that decision was some of the weekly data the Chinese government tracks, things like flights and road traffic in China. You know, just to sort of summarize what we're seeing there, production, output, that's beginning to recover. But then on top of that, there's a backlog of ships now in Chinese ports. The global trade has come to a halt. And of course, what that means is that U.S. manufacturers are starting to worry that in the next few weeks, they're going to run out of parts.
Chris Lowe, the chief economist at FTN Financial, thank you for helping us with this.
Thank you, David.
Also, crude oil is down another 3.7% today, with a barrel at $45.33 in New York, its biggest weekly drop in 4 years. The VIX index of U.S. stock market volatility opened at nearly 41 today. When it's quiet, it's down near 12 or so. As we track the spread of this pneumonia-causing virus, the hope is for a treatment or a vaccine. Making new medicines is not fast or cheap, and it's a risky business proposition, but a global outbreak can focus minds and money. Sam Whitehead from WABE in Atlanta reports it also helps to have a drug showing some promise already in the development pipeline.
This lab at the Emory Institute for Drug Development in Atlanta is where researchers started looking at the antiviral drug called EIDD-2801. Mike Notches worked on it.
A lot of what we do looks like you're working in a kitchen. except that instead of working with pots and pans, we're working usually with little flasks and little vials like this.
In lab tests on animals, the drug has shown the ability to stop viruses from making more viruses, says George Painter, who oversees the project.
It's a very simple principle. No virus, no disease.
Painter started working on the drug as a way to fight the virus that causes Venezuelan equine encephalitis. But then it showed the potential to stop coronaviruses, and Painter turned the research in that direction.
So when another coronavirus makes the move into humans, we would be ready.
Painter says federal agencies have put $35 million into researching the drug since 2013. He says it could be ready for human testing by mid-April. Ben Newman studies coronaviruses at Texas A&M University in Texarkana. And he says many scientists are now looking over research for past coronaviruses.
And they're trying to see which of these things might be adaptable to the current situation.
Newman says that can be much faster and cheaper than making a drug from scratch. Still, he says there's not likely to be any quick fix for the current coronavirus outbreak, even if there are many promising leads.
You might start out with 1,000 different candidates in the pipeline, and my goodness, if you get to the end of the pipeline and there's even one of those things that drips out the end, that's fantastic.
The World Health Organization estimates it will cost at least $675 million over the next 3 months to scale up the global response to the new coronavirus. Some of that money, it says, should go to speeding up research for new vaccines, drugs, and diagnostic tests. In Atlanta, I'm Sam Whitehead for Marketplace.
And there's news. Amazon has pulled more than 1 million products off its site in the last week for making false coronavirus claims. These are full of baloney things touted as some kind of cure or defense against the virus. I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Morning Report. From APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.